For October the 22nd, 2021, we talk about Murder House, Back for Blood, and Operation Tango. Welcome to Level 390. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. This is the first episode where it really feels like fall to me. Here. We've been heading there, but we are in the back half of October. I'm real bummed out because this is around the time when I would usually be going to the Portland Retro Games Expo, but that is not happening for world reasons. So yeah.
This is where I am. It is solid fall in the mornings and then still blazing summer in the afternoons.
Yeah, that sounds like Cincinnati to me. But yeah, no, I really don't have an awful lot going on here. It just lots of work. Lots of work. So I will defer. David, what you been up to?
Not a whole lot. Went to a Rocky Horror picture show party thing.
No. Oh, had you been to one before?
No. So I've never seen it. Didn't know what it's about, and I still have no idea what the heck it's about.
It's hard when everybody's shouting over it. Also, the plot. I mean, it doesn't make an awful lot of sense as a
story. A pseudo requirement for a cult favorite.
Yeah.
Did you get a red?
It was also weird because, so, it was a thing where basically, because logistics is a thing, logistics got outsourced to like. Oh, you invite everyone you know, that sort of thing. So, like, I didn't know that's what this is. Go there and, like, end up at a party where half the people are dressed in drag.
Yeah.
It's like, being people that normally do not dress in drag, I should say.
It's an event. Yeah, did they single you out as a newcomer?
No.
Okay. In the past, I have heard this has not happened to me, but like I've heard that they get the new people up, make them fake an orgasm on the microphone. But that might be a regional custom.
I've heard this was much more chill.
That's good.
It was. No, it was actually a really good if bizarre and confusing time.
Nice. What were you gonna say, Ben?
I'd heard similar stories where it's like they write like red V's and lipstick on you if it's your first time there
for being a virgin. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is mostly based on stories. I know things got wild at the Esquire there in Cincinnati on their monthly Rocky Horror Nights. Yeah.
It's based on descriptions I've read on Twitter, which are automatically the worst version of whatever thing you are reading about.
Yes, it will be. it will be magnified. Ah, well, that's cool. Ben, how about you?
I had a pretty low-key weekend. I was sick last week, so I was still recovering from that. And then I have friends coming to town this weekend, so I need to, like, clean up my place and, like, get everything together. And that's kind of dominating this week.
Yeah. It's always that panic clean right before you have company. It's like, everything would be so much easier if I kept it this way.
Yeah. Well, I always, like, I don't know if you guys do this or not, but I always try and, like, deep clean, like, bathroom and, like, bleach clean everything. So I try and do that, like, 2 days ahead. Stuff, but I don't know.
I try and do that. What's acceptable for me, I cannot assume is acceptable for everybody else. And it's not like I keep it squalid or anything, but it's just maybe a little bit more conscious of the toothpaste on the inside of the bathroom sink. You know,
yeah, I'm solidly on team. They knew what they were getting into.
This is telling me it's good. I've never successfully stayed at your place when I was in New York.
Yeah, everyone who came here was volunteer.
I just didn't know they were volunteering for an experiment.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Most good experiments, they don't.
I'm an over-anxious host too, so maybe don't take my anecdotes on this as the proper behavior. I have no idea what is preferred.
Oh no, my policy is to paint the guest room and the bathroom white, a la the producers, when anyone new comes over.
Yep. You just got to slap a new coat of paint up on that bad boy. Live in a place for 5 years and you paint the room so much that it's smaller.
House of not leaves.
Yeah.
It's like an inverse house of leaves.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. How about you, Dennis?
I'm doing good. I went camping this weekend.
Oh, cool. Where to?
Oh.
Yeah. It was a place out in Neville, Ohio. It was through my church, like a men's retreat weekend kind of thing.
Oh, I know that. Yeah,
man camp. And part of the weekend is like you work the land. You know, like build paths and clear brush and all that kind of stuff. My assignment, or like my group's assignment, was clearing this copse of trees, that like smaller trees that was growing out from the thing. It was like, hey, cut them down. So we had a guy with a chainsaw and like groups of people moving the trees once they were felled. It was a lot of fun. But as all but one tree was down, my buddy was like walking past the guy with the chainsaw, and jokingly he was like, hey, leave that one. Like, leave one to tell the others not to get out of line.
Make an example.
kind of laughed at it, kept on walking, expecting him to fire up the chainsaw, yeah. And then turned around to realize he had actually been like, okay, and left.
Oh, gosh.
We're like, do we go get him? Was he actually supposed to leave it? We just got like, it'll probably be fine. And so he left it. And it's like right on the path that everyone takes to go in and out of this property.
So it would have been seen. Yeah.
Yeah. 1,400 guys walking past this solitary tree that were like, yep, we did that.
Yep.
So I will be interested next year to see if the tree is still there, our handiwork.
To see if the example is still there.
Yeah. But now I have like an increased level of sympathy for like the army or any large group that's trying to get something done, and just the inefficiencies that pop up of like, I heard we were supposed to X. Okay, I guess that's it. Like, in addition to that, we had like the first like four or five trees that we carried to the pile and like set down. It was pretty far away. Mm-hmm. And then someone was like, yo, no. You put it in this pile here that's way closer. And so we had to go get the trees and take them back to the right spot.
You put it here, it's easier.
I think
do more
just
work.
Trying to keep us busy. Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Just trying to tucker you out so you'll sleep that night. Like sending your kid taking your kids swimming, you know.
Exactly. It did not work, man. I slept. I had the little like air pad thing under the sleeping bag like you're supposed to have. Didn't help.
Oh yeah.
I was up like every 15 minutes, it felt like. But it was a fun time. It's
not a bed.
No, it is definitely not. Like I had the cold weather bag too, so that was nice. I was not cold, but when you try to roll over in one of those things, it like you feel like you're wrapped in cellophane or something. It just, yeah. I think I learned that I roll over a lot more than I think in my sleep, and it just did not sit well with me.
Just you just wake yourself up having dreams of like somebody going to the kitchen to try and sneak leftovers, opening the foil.
Yeah. Oh gosh, yep. It was terrible.
Yeah.
Terrifying. But yeah, so I have a solitary tree in memoriam.
Nice.
That property. Now
I had a lot of people that I used to work with went to the church that you're talking about, and they had gone on that. I thought that the name, when I first heard that it was called Man Camp, I thought it was a little bit embarrassing, but when it was actually described to me, like what happened there, and it's like, yeah, like just dispelling bad things about masculinity and what that means for like fitting, you know, for getting along with people, right?
The central kind of thesis is the opposite of being a man is not being a woman. Mm-hmm. The opposite of being a man is acting like a boy.
Yeah.
Or acting like a child. So
yeah,
that's helpful.
You know, and there's nothing wrong with going and cutting trail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nice. Well, that sounds like some banter. I'd like to talk about some video games. So to do that, I think we've got to do a regular kind of show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with...
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Does anybody have anything new?
I do.
Okay, Dennis.
Yeah, I'll keep my role right on going. I got to play a cool co-op game called Operation Tango.
Ooh.
Okay. It's like a rhythm game, like a dancing game?
No, it is a dance of death, but not of the rhythmic kind.
This is asymmetrical co-op where mm-hmm. one person is the operative going into a facility and the other person is the voice in the van, like hacking into doors and sending all the info in, and you're doing it over voice mm-hmm. chat. Is that correct?
Exactly. So yeah. It's basically keep talking and nobody explodes, but just extrapolated to like a spy game.
Nice.
And I think it's technically, it's like the operative and the hacker is the way they describe the two roles. Mm-hmm. It is on Microsoft Game Pass or Xbox Game Pass. Mm-hmm. And the game has a friend pass available.
Oh, nice.
So my buddy was on Xbox and had it through that. And then I was able to download it on PC and the friend pass version. And we were able to like sync up and play absolutely no problem. Which I just thought was really cool. Like I am fully behind the way cross-platform is kind of becoming standard.
Yeah.
And it's just getting easier and easier to not have to worry about what platform your friend is on.
I love that it's now just more of a story when a game doesn't offer that, such yes. as when Monster Hunter Rise is coming to PC and they're like, yeah, no, can't touch anything with Nintendo. Sorry. Yeah.
Dude, really?
Yeah. Well, that's cool
Is that surprising?
Oh, absolutely not. But they,
Nintendo
you know.
Is basically the game company that hates gamers.
They at least hate gamers who want to play games with each other. Yeah. I mean,
to invert the Valkyria Chronicles quote, I'm disappointed, but not surprised.
So, I mean, is this game as cool as it sounds? Because being the voice in the van, being the guy in the van is like, I have wanted a game about that. Like, that's always my favorite role in a heist, you know?
Yeah, in that movie. It is. And they do a lot to make that feel cool. Because you know, ultimately what you're doing in large part is reading the instruction manual to take the analogy to keep talking. Mm-hmm. And they do a lot to spice that up UI-wise. So the two where I played the hacker was infiltrating a corporate headquarters and then trying to steal data off of someone who was on a moving bullet train. Yeah. And in both of those, the UI was completely different and very flashy. So the corporate headquarters one, I had hacked into their like building architecture, and it was, you know, I was looking at like a network of cubes in front of me, and I would click a cube and it would go into that and have another network of cubes, and everything was blue and glowy and cubey and moving around. So
it's all cubes.
It was very cube centric. And then on the bullet train one, the interface that like had nothing to do with that. It was almost like you were staring at an infographic of the train, mm-hmm. And could like see where people were in the cars and see the different systems of the train. You could like flip between tabs. And so it felt like a completely different operating system. And I think that's really cool that, you know, as much as the operative is in completely different environments for each level, mm-hmm. They make sure that the hacker is in equally different environments for each level.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so that's done really well. In both the ones that I played with the hacker so far, you are kind of in place though. You're not trying to like move around. So I think physical movement through a space is reserved for the operative, which is fine. They give you plenty to do. Yeah, I guess the incentive for for getting the like premium version of this, or like me not just staying on the friend pass indefinitely, is they talk about like there's extras that you'll have access to as the hacker and the operative, and I think we sussed out like the extras is like when the operative is in an elevator, the hacker can put up different holographic displays in the elevator. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so I took an elevator ride early in the first mission I was playing as the operative, and my buddy's like, hey, check this out. It's a winter theme. Hey, now it's a, you know, it's a techno theme.
Yeah.
There was a spooky theme. But that's all we could find that was actually like different for owning the game. Yeah, the playing the hacker feels really cool, especially in the moments where they're doing information overload, and you need to like be going back and forth between two tabs at once, or something unexpected pops up while you're working on something else. Like those moments are really cool, but it does walk a tightrope in which if you know it's cool to have those stressful moments and feel like you're dealing with all this information coming in, but if it actually leads to you failing, then it's just frustrating.
Right.
So, you know, there were definitely gotcha moments where it feels like, okay, well, now that I've died, I understand what to do, and it won't be as big a deal next time. Mm-hmm. But overall, they do a really good job of keeping that tension. On the operative side, you know, like I mentioned, the key thing is you're physically moving around the spaces and getting from point A to point B and, you know, finding the objects and everything like that. But mostly those objects, at least in what I experienced, acted as terminals to get me into similar kind of situations as the hacker was doing.
Okay.
Like, you know, I would get to a computer screen and that would open up a puzzle that could have fit easily on my side or the hacker's side. Or, you know, I'm trying to scan the devices of the people around me on the train. But, you know, once I've found that person, then I'm doing a mini game that is me standing and interacting with that device. So effectively more hacking. So I guess to an extent, the game knows what it's good at and what it wants to be, which is focused on those kind of puzzles. Mm-hmm. And they're not trying to do any huge traversal or platforming puzzles with the operative. There's just kind of this physical space to that aspect of the game.
Nice.
There was some where your positioning mattered. For example, one, I was trying to deactivate a series of terminals with a laser grid that was going around them. And so I had to like run to a terminal, open it up. Then we had to solve the problem together before the laser grid got around.
And was this one of those laser grids where that could be defeated by crawling?
No, unfortunately not. There was no crawl button.
Hmm.
Oh, no, I meant more like there's all these games where there's no crawl button, but that's the only thing making the laser grid dangerous.
Oh, yeah. No, this was definitely an overkill laser grid, in that it wasn't just like one laser or a pattern of lasers. It was like a snaggle-toothed every which way direction laser grid that would completely cover the area. So
did it
they clearly saw that weakness.
Did it go into like a rhythm game, like DDR kind of thing, so you could break dance through the lasers?
I wish. No, I just had to walk backwards. That's not to say it's not in the later levels, so I'm holding out hope.
Yeah. I mean, if they know it's good for them.
A real operative would have moonwalked backwards.
Yeah, that's for the higher level difficulties. It's a relatively stylized aesthetic, and you know, nothing too crazy there. So I appreciated that with a lower end machine, I didn't have to worry about being able to run it.
Yeah.
And I also appreciated that, like I mentioned with the hacker, there was really good variety. And I think I only saw one like puzzle type a second time across three or four missions.
Yeah.
So other than that, everything felt completely bespoke to the mission, which speaks well for the remaining however many there are. I could imagine this getting to a place where it's kind of like, oh, I immediately see that it's this type of mission or this type of puzzle.
Yeah.
And I know kind of how to interact with it. But as much as solving the puzzle, it's been fun figuring out what the puzzle is to solve. Like, that's been a major part of the game so far.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's Operation Tango. And like I said, you might already have this if you have Game Pass.
Yeah, I mean it's on.
Someone
game.
Could be tangoing behind you right now.
This was put on Game Pass. It was also a PlayStation Plus reward a few months ago. Yeah, I forget if it was PlayStation 4 or PlayStation 5. What it was, but I know that it was included.
Oh,
there.
You know what? I think it was PlayStation 5. Actually, I do think my buddy was on PlayStation 5. That bastard who has one.
Oh man, yeah, I'm happy to hear that you enjoy this game. I have heard good things from other people, and I need to find a way to play this thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a good time. I'll play it with you, but you have to own it because I've only got the Buddy Pass version.
I've got Game Pass, so that should be fine.
Sweet. Yeah. That's the only new thing I've been playing this week. You know, more of my standbys, but nothing really to talk about other than Operation Tango.
That's fine. I've got one. This is one that I streamed over the weekend. This was Murder House. Okay. Yeah, so
that's a little on the nose.
Little on the nose. They're leaning into it. They're leaning into a bunch of stuff that I don't think that they should be leaning into. I ultimately didn't
like,
really
like saw blades and things like that.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, leaning. They're pushed into the saw blades, but yeah. This is by an indie developer called Puppet Combo. I had played and talked about a game of theirs. It's a good studio name. I had played and talked about a game of theirs called The Glass Staircase a while back, which this studio's house style is. They're trying to kind of recreate late PlayStation 1, early PlayStation 2 era survival horror games. This one is, real Silent Hill style themed kind of deal. And this kind of the premise is, you in the opening, like in the prologue, you're playing as a little kid who falls asleep and wakes up in the mall. It's locked, and he's locked in there with the Easter Bunny massacre, the Easter Bunny Ripper or something like that. It's a serial killer, dresses in an Easter Bunny costume and kills kids. And you're going around trying to get out of the mall, and then ultimately the rabbit gets you, and then it cuts to 4 years later in 1988, where there is a news crew that is going to do like a package, like, oh, here's the house of the killer. Nobody's been here for X number of years, and of course the killer is active again. Aesthetically, like it nails it. It looks and plays like a, an old school survival horror kind of deal. Even has combat, that doesn't come into play until the end. I guess the back half of the game has a little bit of pursuit, but you don't really need to kill anything until the final encounter. But where this fell down for me was just some real basics in regards to signaling what you're supposed to do. And it drives me up the wall.
I remember at one point you asked, like, am I off base here? Does anyone, know what I should be?
Yep. I asked because, it could just be that this game found a blind spot for me, or I was looking at the chat when a particular detail popped up. But there were just any number of instances where it was really poorly signaled what you need to do. Just baffling decisions made. Okay, so in the prologue, when you're going to find your way out, you find a key, and the key has a number on it. Okay, and you're in the back halls of this mall. There is a locker room, and you think, okay, maybe this is a key that belongs to these lockers. But you go and look at the lockers and interact with a few, and they all throw back the same message. This key doesn't fit the locker, or, these lockers don't look interesting or something like that. And then, it's not calling my attention to a particular locker. There's no locker that has like a bloody handprint on it. There's no locker that is like slightly beat up more so than the other. Most importantly, there are no visible numbers on the lockers as well. And so I figure, okay, maybe that's a red herring. Maybe this isn't a locker key. Maybe that key is a code.
Stock lockers.
Yeah. Just like this is just background. This is just background details. Maybe this is just it's a code because there's a little number pad out there. Maybe the number on here is the combo for that. No, not the case. What they expected me to do was to check every single locker, and it was just a locker that looked like any of the others, just in this bank of lockers off in a corner. just like, yeah, no, just to hope you locked out and found this one to use this on.
Sounds like they're kind of nailing the puzzle design from the 90s.
No, they're not. They really, really aren't. And I made a point of this on the stream to say that, like, it really bugs me, because we're in this renaissance of horror games that are aping the aesthetics of older horror games. The haunted PS1 stuff, Dread X, this kind of like lo-fi, low-poly aesthetic is real in. And that is cool. I like that aesthetic a lot. But that aesthetic, or having a particular style like that, is not actually an excuse to, like, let up on designing your game well, because the combat in those old games wasn't as bad as you remember it being, or as you think it is. It's not an excuse not to have that. The signaling, much better, actually. The Silent Hill, you have a map that is marked as you go. No map in this. Resident Evil, also, you have a map. Resident Evil, you have actual designed points of view. You have the fixed camera camera angles where the game is telling you by what is, you know, prominent in the shot, what should be interacted with. Items have little sparklies on them to draw your attention to them. In Silent Hill, even though it is a 3D camera, that sometimes follows you around, that 3D camera oftentimes has pre-programmed spots that it goes to. It will cut around like a Resident Evil camera does, right?
If I remember correctly, Silent Hill even has like difficulty levels for the puzzles that you can opt into or out of.
For 2 and 3, yes. Yeah. But yeah, that is, you are correct on that. But like this, you know, it's third person, but the camera isn't designed. The camera just kind of, hovers around and tries to like automatically find a space where it can be pulled out enough to show you, you know, at the right scale. There is no, you know, like when I'm running by, the camera angle doesn't change to like focus my attention on that locker. There's no use of like light in the world to draw your eye to where you need to go. When you get to the house, all bets are off because the flow of the puzzles, if you can call it that, is really just, okay, you have one item and you have to go and find where that is going to be used. That oftentimes involves going around and just checking everything. And then you find the new thing, and then maybe something after that, you've got to go find where you've got to go find the place to use what you found, what you just found, you know, et cetera, down the line. There are other characters in this, like you're playing the intern who's along, you've got a crew with you, and they're fun characters. Well, you know,
don't tell us. I bet we can name them without even hearing it. There's, let's see, there's like the too cool for everyone chick. Strike one. All right. There's the dorky guy.
Kinda. Your cameraman is a bit of a nothing. It's the anchor, who is, disgraced and a little bit above it. Her name is Dana. Tony is the quiet, cameraman. And then there's Gary, the like sleazy, 80s porno-esque producer guy.
That was going to be my third one. Yeah.
So I declare news.
I declare it 3 for 3, the too cool for each chick, the nerd guy and the porn star.
Yeah. Yeah.
The three archetypal horror tropes.
and it's playing in those, you know, kind of cliched spaces up to and including the end. There's kind of like a nice Scream 2 kind of thing going on with it. It's like all of that stuff is fine. When you think back to those old games, you think, yeah, those were mostly linear, right? You know, there really wasn't an awful lot of like variance in where you could go. You know, you just kind of, you know, there's a flow chart for how you solve it. There are multiple things that you can find and multiple places where you could use any one of them. Oftentimes you were looking to find, you know, just, it, you know, three of a thing, you know, three crests to put into the door in Resident Evil, stuff like that. Instead, this is just like, okay, I have a key. It just says a key. Keys in survival horror games, they were designed in such a way that there was a description. So like in Resident Evil, everybody laughs, like this is the, you know, this is the club key, this is the diamond key, this is the heart key or whatever, shield, sword, helmet. Like, yeah, that's goofy, but as you're going around the house, you are able to remember, like, okay, I inspected that door, like, oh shit, the shield key is, I think that was back in the dining room. Okay, cool. Here we go. And this, the flow of play just has you going and checking everything. The other characters, though they are, you know, fun, and there are good gory kills in this, because this kind of has a slight, I mean, your enemy is the Easter Bunny, the Easter Bunny Strangler or whatever. But the other characters, they'll even like say something, like the anchor says, oh, I need to go find a place to do my makeup. You know, okay, so is there a bathroom? No, I can't get into a bathroom yet. I go and search for her without thinking, maybe she would have just gone to the basement for no reason.
What?
Yeah, just in the basement, because that's where she had to be.
This is beyond plot blindness. This is suicide. by serial killer.
Yeah, you know, it just there's any number of, you know, kind of these arbitrary things where, like, you know, things can be arbitrary, but, you know, but signal them. I can go and talk to all these other characters, say, oh my gosh, I can't believe she went downstairs. I hate that place. You know, like, there should be a way to find the information that you need to discover it without going right to where I'm expected to use it. I just like the first night where I played the prologue and the first part of the, you know, where you're in the actual murder house, that, like, it was so frustrating and they had squandered all of my trust with it. I was like, okay, I'm going to finish this thing. I just played the second night with a guide. You know, just had it open in a browser on my other monitor, just to let me know, like, okay, the next thing is probably going to be, you know, roughly down here. So I was just like taking a tour of this for the audience, really.
Did that trivialize the game then? Like, is there anything else to do if you're not figuring all this stuff out by brute force?
Something that's cool is after a certain point in the house, the Easter Bunny Strangler, who was supposed to be dead at this point, not the Strangler, it's the Easter Bunny Ripper is what it is, who was supposed to be dead. He was executed by the state. Well, you know, he's active again. He will pop out. He will pop up in random spots as you're exploring, and running away from him and finding a place to hide is genuinely cool and tense, you know, like, that's cool. So that wasn't trivialized. And, like, I don't know, it was cool being, I would not have seen some of the really super creepy stuff that was there. I just kind of wish that I could engage with it on its own terms without having to have this, safety net, because, you know, this explicit safety net taking me, because they just kind of, the developers, it feels like they just kind of threw up their hands and said, it is not our responsibility to, you know, to show you where to go. When in reality, you're supposed to show me where I'm going without me knowing that you're doing it.
Yeah. You didn't guess what I wanted for Christmas, damn it.
Yeah, yeah. And so I feel bad. Yeah,
that sounds like, literally, that is what good design will do. So
yeah, you know, they will take care of you while making you feel like you're being dangled over a pit, right? But there's any number of safety devices there. They're the good design, ideally, should find the gap between what you think you can accomplish and what you actually, you know, and what you can't. Like, there needs to be a difference between those two things, you know, and the right spot should be somewhere in between them, you know. And this, on the glass staircase, there were some roughness to it. There were some pretty bad checkpointing in that one. Like, there were pretty basic things that happened wrong there, but I was just kind of willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. This was really, Murder House got really well reviewed. Like, it's glowingly positive on Steam and all of that. And it's like, just please, for the, you know, just you take the aesthetics, take the old PS1 aesthetic. I love that era of survival horror, just like you do, right? It's but like, give those games more credit, actually, and, you know, maybe apply modern touches without it feeling, you know, obvious, right? It's kind of like, I streamed, this was a few years ago, back in 1995, is what it was called.
God, I thought you were gonna be a few years ago back in 1995. I'm like, dog, that's more than a few years ago.
yeah. I have been hit in the head very hard several times in the past week. No, it was a game called back in 1995, which was really early in the, you know, it was before this kind of, let's say, bumper crop of old style, you know, just revival horror games, right? And I got really frustrated because the combat was very clunky, and the combat was just kind of excessive. You did an awful lot of it, and it was all just really kind of simplistic. And it's like, this is what it was like. Play it. And it's like, no, actually, like, even the original Alone in the Dark, like, yeah, you know, it's not Metal Gear Rising Revengeance or whatever, but, like, that was an interesting combat. Like, you know, even your melee, because you would get into a stance and you could select, like, high attack, low attack, or side attack, as the stuff was coming at you. You know, like there was there was incidents to it. There was interest, and not just like stand here and wait for your gun or your weapon to animate up. And then maybe swing vaguely at this threat and hope that it doesn't like pin you down and do a bunch of damage to you. So the saying, hey, this is like those old games is not the refuge that I think some designers think that it is. And it's really frustrating to, you know, jump into it and think, okay, yeah, we're on the same wavelength here, because I also am nostalgic for this. And then to see, like, apparently they have a low opinion of what those games actually were like.
Oh, no.
You know, based on what they
You'll
made.
You'll like this because you love this old thing. Turns out we hate this old thing.
I don't know. Just like they hate this old. I don't think they hate this whole thing. It's just like, oh, this is what you thought they were like. Go back and play them. Because, like, they solved these problems. They didn't leave you this high and dry. So it was disappointing. I have to say, and I don't like tearing into a small game by a small, you know, by a small studio. They're doing really interesting aesthetic work. I just, you know, I gotta say, I can't put my seal of approval on this one. Yeah, not that anybody was asking for it, but like, I can't recommend it. Seal of approval. Fuck me.
Go watch Cole play it, and then you don't have to.
I mean, I encourage people to buy and play the games that I stream. Yeah, but yeah, it's just a bummer. Sucks. Yeah. Does anybody have any questions? Any questions about that?
I think we covered it in line for me.
Yeah.
Have you been playing anything more fun?
I mean. It's been stuff for other shows. So I did a little bit more Metroid Dread, but I don't have an awful lot more to say about that. I figure I will have more to say when Jala comes on next. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. So that's it. That's it for me. Let's see. David, how about you?
Honestly, I don't have a whole lot. I'm continuing on with, you know, playing a lot of Warframe, but it's just kind of, you know, more the thing. You know, not anything super noteworthy, so.
Yeah. Continuing to do those, what are they, like, the public, like, the shared, like, actual MMO spaces, the persistent zones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Continuing to do the open world thing. Gotcha. Probably the most interesting thing with that is, the fact that, with the open world spaces, the way they kind of, keep track of your progress in effect is you're building up, you know, faction standing. And this one's kind of interesting that, you know, each of your quest givers are basically the members of this, you know, family that's just kind of super dysfunctional, that sort of thing. And as you, you know, work your way through the different levels of the faction, each time you rank up, there's a cutscene that's, you know, you know, two of the members kind of reconciling and, you know, figuring out how to understand each other and that sort of thing. So there's, you know, kind of some story beats to what would otherwise kind of be just a faction grind.
Yeah, that's a more human kind of story than I would expect from Warframe.
Yeah, I mean, especially considering the people in question are, you know, like 9 foot tall precursor people who are, you know, half you know, mutated by Lovecraftian horrors.
Why not?
So,
yeah,
you know, as you do.
Nice.
So has Warframe kicked off? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say that's basically, yeah.
Have they kicked off yet what I can only assume is going to be a completely insane world-bending Halloween event?
So that's actually, that's already a thing. So I've spoken about it previously, but basically those, that family is kind of celebrating Halloween. And so you can basically trade in some of the faction tokens for various, Halloween goodies. So, one of the cool ones is one of the cosmetic customizations you can get are basically like different auras. And so there's some really neat ones for this. There's one aura where you just constantly have like bats kind of flapping around you. and then there's one where Warframe is just covered in kind of wispy spider web. So that's kind of neat. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
But
nice.
But yep, I mean, for a game that's, you know, always kind of leads into the horror stuff, I'm not sure, kind of, it's kind of hard to go more that way for Halloween, but
that hat already has a number of hats on it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Ben, I hope you have like 10 games to talk about.
I can stretch for time.
Please don't. I mean, talk about your games, but
I got a bunch of small ones. So I'll bring up, this is something I posted on the Discord, but I'll bring up Storybook Brawl first. I finally made it to the 3000 tier, whatever that was going for last week.
Oh, sweet.
So you get like a ranking when you do that, and it starts becoming like ELO type rating. However, one of the things I found out very quickly from that is I think I'm done with Storybook Brawl.
Oh, no.
It's pretty daunting after that, where it's like, if you want to get to the next level, you just have to like grind your way up. And so I'm kind of not as interested in doing that sort of thing. So
it's always interesting to hit the point in a free-to-play game where they assume the hooks are deep in enough to screw you.
It's, I don't know. Like cause I watch streamers play it, and it's kind of what the end point is. And I know I don't really want to get to that, but like with this, so usually it's like you have XP every 500 points and you have like a floor when you get there. So you won't drop below that. They have removed and changed both those things. So not only do you need like 1,000 points to get to the next like ranking, but you can drop under 3000 and go lower. And so there's nothing to stop you if you have like a bad run from just kind of like losing a bunch of rankings and stuff like that. And so I kind of like not interested in that, bringing that sort of anxiety into the game. And so I think I still will play it like off and on if I'm like casually like sitting down and looking for a game to play, but I'm not really going for anything more in the game. I think that was kind of the peak that I wanted to summit. So
I'm sure there'll be a big update that brings you back at least for a little bit.
They actually had an update I think yesterday, so they're still like making pretty and trying to patch things correctly. Make stronger heroes a little bit weaker and make weak ones a little bit stronger, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So it is cool to see that like kind of evolve. And there's like one of the artifacts that was like pretty broken, that was like a level 6 artifact, they moved to level 7. So like stuff like that seems pretty fair. So all that seems good, but maybe if they like put out like a new set or something like that completely, then I'd come back and check it out or something. But I think I'm
so
fine.
They added any new characters?
Yeah, like one or two. Yeah, they do that with like balancing. So it's like at level 3, I think they added one or two characters. And in part that was because they had removed one previously. And so it's just like balancing like in that with that respect to make sure like there's a good distribution so that you're tripling like at the right probability, that sort of thing. So, and I think they've added one or two heroes since the beginning of the game, and made like tweaks with each patch. So,
who have they added?
There's one where the mechanic is you need to have for every three. If you have three bad people, then you get +2, and if you have three good people, you have +2 health on everyone. And so it's the kind of unique factor is it's somebody who supports having like half good, half bad characters, whereas like everything else will push you in like one direction or another. So like, good idea, you know, but yeah. Anyway, cool. That's pretty much all I got with Storybook Brawl. I'm going to move on unless there's any questions.
None here.
All right. So I continued playing Mindustry or Mindustry, whatever that weird Factorio game I was talking about last. So I was able to get past kind of the hump that I was in last week where I was having to like constantly re-kill things over and over again and re-kill my base over and over again. Found out because there was a missing link of power, so my menders were not mending because they had no power. So once I did that, then everything was fixed pretty quickly, and it's like, oh, okay, this is defensible now.
Yeah, there's your problem.
Yeah, and so I've kind of like got re-interested in that and played some more. They do a good job of like continuing to like unlock more things with each level. One of the things that I didn't really know last time that came up this time is that your resources in each of the maps that you've played like stack. So when you leave a place, you want to make sure that you're still like producing resources because those will like build back up if you use them. Okay. And so then that's how you can actually unlock new tech, because like, so usually it's like you can make like 4K per map or something like that of each resource. But some of the items to unlock, it might cost like 9,000 or 8,000 or something like that. Hmm. So after you've gone to like two or three levels, you'll have, you know, 4K times whatever, you know, your number of levels you are. So you might be able to unlock those new resources where you wouldn't before. So that kind of creates like an interesting longer game where sometimes you might want to go back to these places you've already captured just to make sure that the factory is actually set up nicely and like is producing resources really efficiently.
Yeah.
And then the main like tech that I've unlocked recently, factories that build units. Okay. And so there's like a sea factory, an air factory, and like a land factory that'll produce like boat units, flying units, or ground units. They're pretty weak right now, but there's another branch of like the tech tree where it's like an upgrade building. So you can like build a conveyor belt and move those units through that to upgrade them. And then maybe they're more like capable. For the most part, I'm just using like electric gun turrets all the way through. And I'm just using like every inch of coal on a given map to be able to like maximize the amount of power that I'm making.
Yeah.
I've kind of weaned off of like things like menders or whatever, because once you get enough like turrets, they don't really die to people. You can kill people like more quickly.
Yeah.
So the last few maps have been good. And so it's more like, now there's not as much pressure in the base defense stuff. It's, I think one of the things that I've changed too is like, I never have like dead time. So I always just pause, make the design of what I want to make, and then unpause. And so it's like your character is always building. There's no like white space for that.
I really respect games that do that. Nothing stresses me out more than games where time still advances, even in the tiniest way, while you're trying to make decisions.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's how I was playing last week. And so that's why I was feeling stressed. But now it kind of alleviates that a bit.
You found the rhythm.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. So that game's pretty cool. I'll probably like there's still like two or three different like branches of tech that I haven't unlocked yet. As far as like resources, there's like titanium and a couple other ones. I'll probably play a few more levels and see if it gets interesting. So far, like the tech that's unlocked though, like the, like what I was talking about with the automation, like I built some of them just to experiment with it, but like they weren't that interesting or they weren't that effective in like killing the things. So it's like, oh, that's kind of a waste.
Yeah.
But I might explore with where the tech goes for the, but then I don't know, I might wean off of it, but we'll see. There's some other features in the game too. There's like multiplayer and you can like online host things and stuff. So I might dip into that to see what it's about. But yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting little game. Yeah, it's kind of cool.
I mean,
I think it's a really good take on the factory type game, or like adds a lot of interest to it.
The rhythm to it weirdly reminds me, have any of you played, this is an old arcade game, it's a, I believe an Atari game called Rampart.
Oh, that sounds really familiar. Hold on a second.
Yeah, I'm sure. Look up images of it, and you, if you played it, you'll recognize. It's a 4-player game, and each player has a fort in one corner of the screen, and it alternates back and forth between launching attacks at them, like firing cannons at their castle. Their fortification, and you know, you've got to damage the inner portions of it, but you're splitting that time where you're attacking with build phases, where each character is given basically Tetris pieces to build up. So you have to, you know, during a limited time, given a random set of tetrominoes, build up your build up the proper fortification to kind of undo the damage that was done during the previous round. It's really ingenious, really fun, and the split in Mindustries kind of play between the factory play and the tower defense. There we go. So the factory play and then the tower defense. That sounds that is giving me big Rampart vibes, which is a good thing because Rampart owns.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that looks really, really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's all I got to say about that game for this week.
They should get the Legend of Zelda license so they can make a Twilight Princess version and call it Midnistry.
I appreciate that.
All of you appreciated it. It was great. Impeccable. Even. Yeah.
Don't hurt your arm patting yourself on the back.
You only pat yourself on the back if you do something like unexpectedly good. I knew that one was going to land. So,
so another game I've been playing in the past week is I picked up a new one, Back for Blood.
Nice.
Yeah. I played some co-op of that over the weekend, so I was pretty happy with that. It is basically Left 4 Dead. there's a few improvements. There's a few things that aren't as good. But on average, it's like the same experience. So that's kind of like, hey, do you want to play Left 4 Dead and not know everything? Like, cool. Here's a game that does that.
Yeah.
It is $60. So like, I guess do know that you're basically just getting a Left 4 Dead game for $60. So I guess take that with a grain of salt. Like, I mean, if you played Left 4 Dead for like years, then it's probably a fine deal. If it's something that you only play a few times, and this is something you'd only play a few times, you might want to avoid it, but until it's cheaper.
The cost calculus changes if you have Game Pass, because you can just download it.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. Mm-hmm. So a few details about it, comparing it to like Left 4 Dead, is instead of it being like five different acts that you kind of pick and play which one you want to do, there is a giant like timeline of dots of maybe like 20 to 30 like dots, and each one representing like a stage, like what an actor, like a scene is or whatever in Left 4 Dead. And you play it chronologically. So I guess that's probably akin to like what happens the first time you play Left 4 Dead, is you probably have to do that similar thing. But a difference is, you have this like fort, this like base, that you go back to in between, acts. And that's where you kind of do upgrading and deck building and stuff like that. The tutorial's kind of weird. You basically walk around the base and there's a bunch of like pre-made videos where it's like, go click on this thing. And it's like a weird, you know, like maybe like 3 to 5 minute video of like, I can't place the narrator, but it's like, it sounds like he would be somebody, a narrator of like a truck commercial, where it's like
drill sergeant, is that?
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. It's like a military base. But they're like describing like how you do like deck building and stuff like that. But it just feels very like out of place, because it's like highly like marketed kind of, but then it's like half in the world of like trying to be in the army place. Anyway,
I'm just trying to imagine a drill sergeant talking about deck building. Entirely too many minions, maggot.
Yeah.
What is this man ram?
And so we only played the first scene together, or the first like act which is like maybe like four or five different like levels. And after you finish that, it unlocks more characters. I'm not sure if it unlocks all the characters or not, but it unlocks like maybe like four or five new characters. And like the level that we played, it, you know, it hits the same beats as like Left 4 Dead. There's like a grand finale type mission towards the end of it. You get pretty overrun. There's like a portion where it's like unlimited zombies or oops all zombies, you know, and you just have to like book it and just be shooting behind you as you're running. The specials, I think David mentioned this like last week, they're not as special as the Left 4 Dead specials, meaning a lot of times you can just like take them out with your bullets and it's not really that big of a deal. Like I think the spitter is like a good example of that, where, and the spitter in Left 4 Dead where it's like, oh shit, like if he's shooting at you, you need to be very focused on him because you might get a pool of acid on you.
And yeah, or you want to make sure not to kill him in a choke point. This one, same thing with the smoker, like you, or you know, and definitely the boomer. You just really want to make sure that you're killing them in an advantageous place.
So there's interesting choices there. And this one, it's like you get pinged a little bit, and you're like, "Ow!" And then you turn and shoot the spitter instead. Like that's it, you know. So there's like not much risk. You're not much like you can even ignore them and let them keep shooting you, and it's not like that big of a loss.
Yeah, so, I remember David saying that there aren't the kind of special undead that require teams to be together, or there are like ways to mitigate that where you can give yourself the ability to, you know, for lack of a better example, like unpin yourself when a hunter gets on top of you, stuff like that, right?
Yeah, there's not like the consequences that there are dead. So like there's like a boomer, but even if he booms on you, it's just your health goes down a little bit and that's it. Ooh. Like there's not like a horde of zombies like chasing you directly when that happens anymore, you know.
Right.
Their equivalent of the tank was kind of cool the first time you see it. It's like a literal giant character that everyone has to like shoot at for a long time. It's more of like a slow lumbering but giant thing that can like hit really hard. But even that, it's like you're not as worried about it as you are something like the tank, where the tank can like close in on you really quickly. So I don't know. Yeah. So it's like, and I'm not trying to like talk complete shit on this game. I'm just saying that like all of the like specials are just not quite as good as like the Left 4 Dead ones, but they're still fine.
It can do literally nothing without being compared to what Left 4 Dead did. It's literally the same team. So
yeah.
I think it loses some luster just by the fact of there's nothing it could do that doesn't have a comparison.
Yeah. But on the other hand, it's like the graphics are nicer in general. The melee attack is jankier, but feels better in a sense. Because like there's like this one choke point in one of the levels, and I just sat there and held down the axe, and it's like, okay, and that killed an entire wave of people running to that choke point. Because it like will multi-kill anything that is in the area when you swing down.
Although the one bad thing is if you get the knife perk.
Yeah.
So there's a perk that basically changes your push into a knife attack, and it is literally better than every single other melee weapon.
Okay. Can you clear a horde of zombies at a choke point?
So I guess, well, particularly at higher difficulty levels, the melee weapons aren't all one-hit kills on regular infected.
Gotcha.
Whereas the knife is.
Gotcha. Mm. That could be the case then. We played the normal difficulty. It might get more interesting the higher up you go.
That stands to reason.
You mentioned the graphics being better. Is this a game that's going to tax a lower end machine?
I'm not sure.
No.
You can try it out. I'm playing it on Windows 7 and it's working, so.
Okay, yeah.
I have like a 6-year-old graphics card that was even old when I got it. So I think most people are probably going to be good on this.
Yeah, I'm entering the phase with my equipment of like every game coming out, and I'm like, I might not be able to run it.
You're bracing yourself this will not run as well message or whatever.
Yeah, that's the treadmill. It's a turning.
Yep.
This game was starting to convince me that I might need to update my operating system, because I had to watch like 3 or 4 YouTube videos get it running correctly on an older machine.
Oof.
So
does Microsoft still put out security updates for Windows 7?
Yeah, I don't know. Who knows?
It's details.
So I actually forgot I did play this some, and have you messed with the Horde mode at all?
I have not, no. We just played one session for maybe like 2 or 3 hours into the first act.
So that's probably my biggest complaint with the game right now is the Horde mode is PvP only.
Yeah. I can't remember if I read something. I know we talked about it last week, but I also read something to that. But
yeah. It's just I know. I feel like that was a big miss because I realize I'm at least somewhat in the minority on this, but I think PvP in Left 4 Dead is just really poor.
So I was thinking about this too, and I was thinking that maybe one of just fighting the computer might be too easy or not interesting enough since like the specials aren't as interesting. Maybe that's why they are like enforce that you're playing other players to like, maybe that like, otherwise it might not be as interesting of gameplay or something maybe.
Yeah, I could see that. I've never seen an instance of something like this where the optimal strategy was not also the same as the worst parts of the enemy design.
Oh, so it's like Dark Souls?
Yeah. Yeah, just, you know, how not so much, you know, how can I play this game well, so much as, like, how can I exploit the flaws in this system?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't mean that. I don't know enough about Dark Souls to know if that's actual shot or not.
I was going to ask for examples because I was curious, because also I was unclear on what David meant, but I didn't want to sound defensive of Dark Souls.
I don't want to talk about it.
No. but David, just like, it sounds like you're saying that, like, oh, you know, the strategy just has you like leaning into just the most frustrating aspects of what these things can do in order to be effective, as opposed to doing anything, say, like thinking on your feet, like when you spawn in as this special, you know, really all you can do is get into this position and hope that you will attack the right person at the right time, like that kind of thing. Because like that's a little bit of my frustration.
I know with the hunter, which in Left 4 Dead is kind of, you know, super fast enemy that can, you know, jump on people and pin them. A lot of this strategy was all about like where are the locations and situations where it's not possible for someone, you know, where I can attack someone from a blind spot, like as soon as they open a door.
Right. And there are only certain number of places where you can do that, and so it is part of the meta that you're going to be waiting there. That place probably has a name that players who are playing know, and they know to check that spot, stuff like that.
Right. And so to me, yeah, I think that's just like that's the worst part of the game, not the best part.
Yeah, I can understand
or
that.
Or just like, you know, how can I you know, pounce someone so that they fall someplace that their allies can't get to them.
Right, right. And if you don't do that, then you're not effective.
Right.
Yeah. One other interesting thing in the game comparing it to Left 4 Dead is kind of like the continue and revive systems. So it seems like you can kind of like infinitely revive people after they're downed, whereas like in Left 4 Dead,
yeah,
it's like
three.
If you died like two or three times, you permadied.
So that's actually not the case here.
You don't have infinite revives?
You don't have infinite revives, but what you might be seeing is revives are very explicitly a stat that they play with. So depending on which character you're playing as or what perk cards you have, you might have more revives than normal.
Okay. Do you know like how many revives you have?
I'm not certain. I just know there are cases where you'll completely skip the down state and go straight to dead.
Okay. So I haven't seen that yet. So I'll be interested to see like how that works then. But one of the things they changed is the continue system, and it's almost like the opposite case, where in Left 4 Dead, you could retry levels as many times as you want. And this one, you have like two continues. So if like your entire party dies, you get one continue. Mm. And then if your entire party dies again, you go back to the fort and that's it. And you don't get any of like the rewards that you'd accrued while you're trying to make it.
That so sounds like a great way to lose a lot of progress and a lot of time.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm not sure how they mitigate that. I mean, on the first level, we were able to get through and we used, but yeah, like harder levels, like I could see that being like leaving a real bad taste in your mouth. If yeah. like that said, I don't know, like the upgrade in the card system right now doesn't seem to have like a whole lot of impact. We all have like the base decks or whatever, where it's like you have five cards and you pick one of them for each scene. Mm-hmm. And like, it's, they're all like very basic things. So it's like, there's the knife one that David talked about, but like plus 10% ammo or plus 10% stamina, that type of thing. But it's like very small stakes. The one thing that was upsetting is I had a shotgun and I did plus 10% ammo and it was not enough to increase it by even one. So it was like, oh, well, that's a waste.
Oh, no.
But
I hate a game that is afraid of breaking the game. Like that is the entire fun of so many deck building games, is finding those combos that just like, it's all right, like for this run, I'm going to erase everyone and not even have to think about it. Like, would it be so bad if for one level in Back 4 Blood you got to live that?
So it might have that in there. I'm just saying that the weak and kind of ineffective.
Yeah.
You're just saying what?
Yeah, you cut out, sorry.
Oh, there might be that sort of thing in the game, but I'm just saying that right now we're six, so they're pretty like ineffective.
Yeah. Yeah, it I mean, I agree with you wholeheartedly, Dennis, on that. Multiplayer is what tends to ruin that, because if you have something so unbalanced, people will complain, or they will you know, they're going to kind of overuse it and make play miserable for everybody else.
Because this PvP ruins everything.
Yeah.
Going back to Storybook Brawl, I mean, that's pretty good PvP. You can have busted combos and it doesn't feel like.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
It's like, maybe I should go play more Storybook Brawl.
But no, like, kind of in summation, though, Back 4 Blood seems pretty fun. I'm just like happy to have kind of a fresh new experience. That's pretty much, you know, the game that I like to play. There's like basically more of it, and it's an unofficial sequel. So
yeah.
Yeah, and then I think in my Discord channel we started like a role for it, so if people want to play, I can add them to that and just ping incessantly, and we can try and organize like to four and stuff like that. So
nice.
Yeah, should be fun.
Back 4 Blood.
Yeah, I got one last tiny one to talk about, which is a game that came out today, which is Inscription. I finished the demo last week, and it's pretty fun. I bought the game. I started to play it before the podcast. I'll continue playing it after the podcast. Yeah, I don't know. It continues to be... Yeah, I was completely sold last week when you told me it was made by the person. So it's like, oh, okay.
By the person who made Pony Island?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I am about halfway sure I'm going to stream it this weekend. So. Sweet. So yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to it. So you did the demo. Now you're breaking into the main game.
Yep.
Anything different about the way that starts?
Nope.
It's,
I'm trying different things that I didn't try when I went through.
Yeah. Nice.
Yep.
Cool. No, I know. Will wrote a good review for it over at the AV Club. Says it's one of the best things played this year. So I am I'm excited. It looks cool. Inscription.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, it's almost Halloween, folks. So let's get spooky. Specifically, you know, there's lots of different variants of spooky. We wanted to know this week, what video game character is the most unsettling to you? So not necessarily outright scary or monstrous, but they just leave you with the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah. I will get us started here with Adam, who says, been into Monster Hunter since Monster Hunter Generations. A monster that is quite scary is Keizu. He is a white-skinned wyvern. Not really scaly either, just smooth and wet-looking. Then last, the neck is like a wobbly dick in the head with no eyes or anything other than a big mouth and lots of teeth. And there's an image here. Yeah, the smooth dragon. I cannot brook that. There's one of those. Ooh. In Dark Souls, Seath the Scaleless. It looks like no, it just looks naked. Don't care for it one bit. And I don't care for Keizu.
No.
So
Alexa, show me the worst STD.
So I do love, though, that that's what came up on Google Images when I searched for this.
Oh, oh no, you're dealing with I'm going to edit what you said, Dennis, so it didn't trigger other people's. The future is weird.
I definitely just got a lecture. I'm glad I had my headphones on with you guys and I could not hear what she was talking about.
At least it wasn't one of the ones with the screen, so it could show you.
Here's what I found on the internet. No.
you have said the cursed words. Ben, what does David say?
It says Winter Lanterns and Bloodborne. The combination of that song they sing and their design, creepy.
Very, very creepy. Look like big brain head kind of guys.
With predator mouths.
Mm-hmm. No, they're just incredibly upsetting, and they're wearing the same clothes that the doll is. Kind of the person or the entity that you level up at. Yeah. David, what does Callum say?
Callum says, that picture is exactly right. Vardo, people shouldn't bend or move like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Voldo, this appears to be like a late Voldo. What vintage of Voldo is this?
I think it's Soul Calibur. Well, no, actually the one I used, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I was looking at videos of it earlier since I chose the photo, and the one I was watching was Soul Calibur 6, but I'm not sure which vintage this one is.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a steampunk Voldo.
Yeah, you got something in a Voldo with the goggles. The Voldo that I know like is just like real pale, like painted white skin and like red leather gear on it. Yeah, more so than like the BDSM, you know, kind of kink angle to them. It's the joints and the movement that wake me out about Voldo.
Yeah. Yeah, it's seeing the video, like seeing him in motion is a huge part of it.
Yeah.
Specifically the like crab walk, upside down crab walk is really unsettling. Like,
yeah.
No human should skitter.
So I'm trying to figure out, I just saw something recently that was talking about what the inspirations were for like his design and combat style and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really interesting because they actually made it make a little bit more sense, but I can't find what it is now.
Well, like what nature of thing were they referencing with his design?
I can't remember. There's some sort of like, oh, this is supposed to be like, you know, some sort of ethnic dance or you know like something. I totally forget what, but it was like seeing it, it's like, oh, okay,
BDSM plus crab plus Mardi Gras.
So Mardi Gras, I imagine there's plenty of power play and crab that happens at Mardi Gras. Yeah, no, so just Mardi Gras, baby.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see here. Dennis, what does Zach say?
Zach says, necromorphs from Dead Space are just the right kind of body horror to literally make my skin crawl.
Yeah.
They are
just enough of their body is identifiably human.
Yeah, for those go right past unsettling to me to overt monstrous, but
yeah. Let's see here. Greg says, I don't recall the guy's name, but L.A. Noire has an agent who enjoys, quote, young girlfriends. When one of them is interviewed by Cole, she says that it wasn't that bad, that all he does is lie there and grunts a few times. I had to go take a dozen cold showers after that scene to wash the filth off. Gross. Yeah.
Yikes.
LA Noire is a good game, but that is a very unsettling interaction. Let's see, Ben, what does Gwen say?
Gwen says, Axel from Twisted Metal. He turned himself into a car, Axel.
truth in advertising, at least. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's see, David, what does Rookie say?
Rookie says, every NPC with a physical body and soma. And most of the ones that don't have bodies as well. Thinking back on it, they should have just called the game Heebie Jeebie Factory.
It would be... I almost prefer that because I would have walked in completely unprepared for the existential questions raised therein. and then Dennis, what does Phil say?
Phil says, is the Sneak King just a given? also... there is no one in Twisted Metal that isn't just a bit messed up.
Well, including Sweet Tooth, the serial killer clown. Although yeah. I recently learned that Sweet Tooth is not the name of the clown. It's the name of the car. Sweet Tooth actually has like the clown has a different, has a different name, which really screwed me up. What?
No, Calypso is, sorry. I was trying to remember. Oh, I thought yeah. it was Calypso, but Calypso's the other person.
Yeah. Calypso's the genie who runs the event. Yeah.
Is there a character in Twisted Metal that can be considered like the lawful good?
I don't know
of the set.
I don't. I only know a handful of Twisted Metal characters.
There is, but it very. They all, from what I recall, they all very much lean into the like lawful good taken to the extreme.
Turn into
gets
a
creepy real quick.
Turn into a Templar.
Needles Kane is what
yeah,
you're thinking of.
I was gonna cut in with that. I was about to say something stupid like that.
although apparently there's a Marcus Kane as well.
Maybe.
Driver of Roadkill. Hmm. His picture looked the least craziest.
Yeah. It's tough for me to find one that isn't like intentionally so, you know, like, cause I could say, like Eddie from Silent Hill 2, but he's really meant to be, you know, like unpredictable and childlike, you know, I want to, you know, I want to say like Raiden from Metal Gear Solid 4 and Revengeance, the way his body has been modified, specifically when he has that weird, see-through jawbone is really hard to look at. If you have any like dental anxiety, you know,
let's make him a main character.
yeah. And that works into his story too, you know, like in Revengeance for what happened, for why he fell back into killing after 4. But yeah, I would say Raiden, although that is intentional. And I was racking my mind trying to find one that is unintentional, but I could not. Ben, how about you?
Oh, are these supposed to be unintentionally creepy?
No, that's just a rule that I put on myself.
Gotcha. Okay. So I have two examples that evoke the similar emotion that I'm trying to convey. So one is Clayface in the Batman game.
Oh, yeah.
And then the other is the subplot in Knights of the Old Republic where you talk to a character and you find out that that character is actually dead. And you're talking to a transforming alien that's just taken on the shape of that character. Ugh. So like that, having that sort of conversation where you're where you're talking to someone and they're not the actual form that you're seeing is like very unsettling. Very
oh creepy. Yeah. When they're tricking you, when they're deceiving you, yeah. This is not their real form. Ugh. Yeah. David.
This one's tough. I mean, I think anyone with mind control powers, you know, especially like for example, what is it, PsyOps, where you can like mind control someone and force them to commit suicide.
Oh yeah, that's screwed up.
Also, just more generally, it's probably semi-intentional, but unexpected. No Man's Sky really, really leans into the Lovecraftian and existential horror stuff.
Yeah. a game plan that plays with the infinite like that. It seems like a natural, natural fit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Dennis.
Yeah. So you sent me furiously Googling because I had remembered it as Seath. But what I was remembering was King Seeker Frampt from Dark Souls.
Big old, big toothy Muppet.
Yeah, just he is so goofy and just kind of shows up at one point. And you're like, oh, boss fight. And he's like, no, hey there, fella. Like, how you doing? And then eventually, like, he takes you down to whatever that area is called by eating you and then spitting you out on the other side.
Yeah, it doesn't have any hands to carry you. It's...
Well, and notably, like, going down that hole, I imagine it is, like, a very small shaft going down. There's no room for him to turn around in that, which would imply that he's got a head on both sides. it's just, the more you think about him, the worse it gets.
So a thing that will always make a thing that will make a person look creepy every time is if they don't have any eyebrows.
Sure.
You know, so Whoopi Goldberg gets around this because you're not used to seeing her any other way, but like the villain in Silent Hill 3, Claudia, doesn't have any eyebrows, and so it becomes really difficult to see her expressions, because you mm-hmm. know, we watch eyebrows to see people's moods. Same thing with Robert Blake's character, the strange pale man in Lost Highway. And anything that is not human, to make it creepy, you just give it human teeth.
Yeah, that's the case here for sure.
Yeah.
And then he's also got the weird, like, chicken waddle things going down either side. Mm-hmm. Like,
kind of looks like a mustache.
And he's a flesh mustache.
Like a catfish, kind of. Yeah, yeah. No, King Seeker Frampt. And then, like, he presents himself all jovially, but if you know what's actually going on in Dark Souls, his role in it is especially fucked up.
Mm.
Yeah.
So yeah, that one does it for me on the unsettling scale.
Yeah, Frampt will do it. Good question. If you would like to participate in these in the future, I want to double check. I got everybody here, right? Everybody here said theirs?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
cool. If you want to participate in these, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. And thank you, Dennis, for putting this one up.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us that are exciting to us. supply chain problems are in the news. They've been a problem for about 2 years now. Nowhere more so than in the console industry. We were joking about PlayStation 5s earlier being really difficult to get a hold of. So I wasn't surprised when I saw that a new Xbox thing was released for pre-order and then immediately sold out. The surprise to me was that this was not an Xbox Series X kind of redesign, like a miniaturization. No, it's a mini fridge shaped like the Xbox Series X. That weird boxy kind of fridge shaped thing. It's a mini fridge. It can fit 12 cans and it's powered by a USB port for $100. I think mostly like made as like a little novelty joke. I wonder
now for $300.
Now for $300 because they immediately sold out and pre-orders are being scalped. So now for $300, they immediately sold out and the pre-orders are being resold, on, eBay for $300. So if you want a fridge that is powered by USB that will chill 12 cans.
here's the question. If I take this fridge, plug it into my computer and then leave it open on the computer to cool the computer, will it successfully cool the computer? Or will the energy used to create the coolness offset the coolness of the fridge?
So it will cool it eventually, but when all the rainforests burn down, there's going to be a blowback effect. But it might be your kids who have to deal with it.
But it's for science, just to figure it out.
Yeah,
I'll make a killer YouTube video about it.
No, I've been fighting a humidifier and dehumidifier for years at this point. You just take the output of one and put it in the input in the other. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I guess I didn't realize this was a thing. There are going to be more of them coming out. It's just really, really funny that even something mostly useless that is shaped like one of these systems will sell out immediately.
You realize we're going to tell our grandkids, you know, Microsoft didn't used to be a kitchen appliance company.
Bold new moves. Oh, gosh. Ben, what's going on Steam?
Yeah, this came out in the middle of last week, but Steam announced that they weren't going to have any games that are, quote-unquote, like blockchain games or NFT games, which is, I am only like tangentially familiar with these types of things, where it's like, the idea is you invest your real money to buy NFTs in a video game that apparently appreciate in value and you sell. So like your character isn't just a character. It has a real world financial like value to it, quote unquote.
No.
Yeah. It feels real creepy and feel real weird. And like,
so it makes my Xbox fridge idea look like something that Greta Thunberg would do.
Yeah. Yeah. It invented by Captain Planet himself. Dennis's Xbox fridge plan. Yeah.
Yeah. So the interesting thing is, so Steam's drawing the line on this and saying like, hey, we're not gonna platform just because in general, they already have rules against this sort of thing of like, trying to have in-game things have actual monetary value to it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is also kind of a weird stance too, because they also give you like trade that with games, but whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, and CSGO.
Yeah, we'll ignore that for now though. But the one of the interesting things is other places like Epic have said that they're not going to do that, at least yet.
They're not going to blanket ban these games that are trying to get you to invest in NFTs.
Yeah. So, whatever. This doesn't impact me. I'm glad it's not cluttered on Steam, I guess, so I'm okay with this.
Yeah. I mean, this to me, like, even before you get to the environmental discussions about blockchain stuff, like, just preventing this, putting a blanket ban so you're protecting your customer base from being fleeced in a speculative market, kind of pump and dump kind of thing. Like that is enough grounds to say like, hey, keep this away. Don't do this. I think this is the right call.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that is dumb and bad. And depending on how Epic handles this, I may make a few decisions about where I buy stuff or, you know,
no one was buying stuff on Epic anyway.
There were a couple of things that were exclusive for a little bit, but then that changed. So
No one's buying anything by choice on Epic anyway.
Oh gosh. The thing that I heard about NFTs, and this also applies to like blockchain stuff, you know, it's not that you don't understand it. It's that, everything you have heard that sounded way too stupid to be true is actually how it works. Oh gosh, there's no bottom.
Mm-mm.
David, what's Pikachu up to?
Yeah. So apparently, Pokemon is turning 25, and with that is releasing a collaboration from a bunch of musicians that is Pokemon 25 the album. One of the people on it is a singer named J Balvin, who is... I don't know what any of this is. sings reggaeton.
It's like a heavily produced, like electronic dance music kind of deal.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Well, it's okay, David. We knew you weren't hip.
Yeah, no. That's definitely the case. Regardless, released a really cool new music video that's kind of him, singing as he walks through a world where Pokemon are existing in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
So you see like a Pikachu help some people jumpstart a car and a Hitmontop break dancing with some people and stuff like that.
Cool.
It's all in Spanish, so I have no idea what is actually being said. But it's super catchy and a lot of fun, and you should watch if you, you know, want to have a better day.
Yeah. I like seeing Pokemon interact with real-world things. Detective Pikachu was okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Still need to go see that.
I think your boys would like it. We covered it we covered it on Adaptation Decay, and it is a nifty kids movie.
Yes, right. My boys would like it. Yeah, that's yes.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean I think that both of you will enjoy it. It's just, you know. And Dennis, round us out.
I feel like that could go bad really quick. Like I'm awesome. Just waiting for Detective Pikachu to get a transfer device.
Oh gosh.
It's rare candies everywhere. We had to seize them.
And Dennis, round us out. What's happening with the PlayStation?
Yeah, it's selling well despite being incredibly hard to find. It just became the best-selling hardware platform in September. But I think the more interesting piece of news in the story that I found is that the Switch spent 33 consecutive months as the best-selling console. I knew the Switch was a return to form after the Wii U, but I guess I didn't have it framed in my head just how well the Switch had done.
What
the Switch
else is done there?
Yeah, I guess that is fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, well done, Switch. It is an excellent console, and maybe not quite as disruptively amazing as the Wii, but certainly a worth paying attention to as an understatement. But yeah, so PS5 is now the best-selling gaming hardware out there. And that is while being severely constrained in terms of supply lines, as we've already mentioned. So I can only imagine how much it would be selling if people could actually get their hands on it.
Yeah.
Well done. Well done, PlayStation. Well done, Switch. And well done, video games just becoming the cultural staple that they have.
Yeah. I would be curious. And I do not expect you to have this information, but just as a thought experiment, whatever, like take the Wii at its height, which probably coincided with a really good year for the DS. Put those mm-hmm. two numbers together, because those were two different SKUs, you know, it was two different systems. So, how does that compare to this right now? Because a thing that is happening is Nintendo used to have a market where it didn't sell its consoles at a loss, but everything was always like way outperformed by the portable, right? The portable was the cornerstone of the business, and everything mm-hmm. else was existed to be supplemented by that, right? Mm-hmm. Now that the Switch is both and it's combined those, what has that done to their overall like market share? and now that it's the same, and also given the fact that there really isn't a portable game market anymore the way that there used to be when there was a DS and a PlayStation portable and Vita.
Yeah.
Because
it's just all on your iPhone.
Yeah. Because phones kind of came and changed everybody's appetite for it. It's just weird to think about that. I would love to know.
I'm having flashbacks over to my Business of Games class. So.
Oh yeah. didn't mean to make this into a busman's holiday for you.
You'll have 30 minutes to write this essay and I will score it based on.
Oh man. Cool. Well, we can call this a short episode if we want to. Sure. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
I ain't saying it.
Buttons, there we go. It would be nice to go. It would be nice to go to sleep.
I was going to stay silent until we had a regular length.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We really appreciate you taking the time. You know what to do to help us out. You can subscribe on iTunes if you're not subscribed. Leave a rating or review in whatever directory you found us in. Tell your friends, all of that good stuff. We'll have announcements about Duckstream here pretty soon. And yeah. I'm trying to think of other big stuff. Dennis, anything with Deck of Wonders that the people should know about?
Nothing incredibly new. I'll remind people that really through the end of the month, maybe through the end of November, I'll keep pre-orders open. Mm-hmm. So if you want a chance to get the game and a bunch of cool extras with it for free, you want to do that pre-order before the end of November.
Cool. And they just do that at deckofwonders.com?
deckofwondersgame.com.
There we go. Cool.
Or any of my socials, it'll all point you to the page on GameFound. It's, you know, the bouncing through the internet that you have to do to get to anything these days.
Of course. Cool. Well, I've been Cole Ross. I forget. I got on my head and I forgot if we say the if we say the last names.
This isn't the legendary Cole Train.
Nope. No, it's not that. No, you can watch my streams. I stream on Twitch at Duckfeed TV.
I've been Dennis Furia. So I feel I'll say it with enough confidence to offset.
Are you saying your last name's it's a wrestler now?
Oh no.
Yeah, you can find me at Deck of Wonders on Instagram.
I'm D Money Smith, because apparently we're saying our names oddly. Yeah, that's all I have to say about that.
I'm just ending with Ben. That's it.
Yeah, that's probably wise. Stick around for some titles. I have one that I feel pretty strongly about. No human should skitter.
I had that as well.
Yeah. I like that.
Okay. What else did you have, Dennis?
I had a couple alternates. I had the drill sergeant of deck building. I had flesh mustache. And then I had a quote from Cole that I just appreciated the way this phrase went. Frampt will do it. With Frampt apostrophe LL.
Yep. Yeah. Ben.
Step one, I have someone could be tangoing behind you, right?
You right now. Okay. And David?
I got nothing.
Okay.
I'm proud of it.
How do you feel about no human should skitter?
I'm good with that.
I can support this.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay. Cool. Well, I'm going to go. I'm gonna catch some Z's.
Not a bad idea.
See it up, dude.
Yeah. All right. Take care, everybody.
See you guys around.
Bye.
Wait.
Oh, but.